Morning, everyone. Tuesday, November 29, Big Sports Breakfast, Sky Sports Radio. A very good morning to you, however, and wherever you are listening. And he's back. Loz is back after his little trip across the Tasman. Morning, Loz.
Morning, fellas. How are we all?
Outstanding. Did you manage to find a place? I suppose it would have been pretty late over there to see the Socceroos on Saturday evening.
No, I didn't. I actually watched it the next day. I didn't see it that night, but had a stunning result, didn't they, the Socceroos? And watching it, I just felt so proud. I felt so proud of the players, how they stuck at their task. At the end of the game, they were out on their feet. Tunisia were coming at them, but they just kept withholding them. And just to see the joy and jubilation at the end of that game by all the players and the coach, Graham Arnold, I think it was great to see, and it sort of brought back a bit of Aussie pride. And I think they give themselves a real chance in their next game, even though it's going to be very difficult, but they certainly go in with a bit of confidence and a bit of belief and a lot of support, because I think a lot of people now are wanting them to do well and hopefully go on to the quarterfinal stage.
Less than 48 hours away from our final group game against Denmark. And Papa, as I say, good morning to you, mate. The Sydney Kings, their winning run on the road ended last night at 17. 94-88, they were beaten in Cairns by the Taipans, who came back from 8 down with less than 3 minutes left. So the Kings' road run ends. Morning to you, mate.
Yeah, morning, Middo, Loza, and morning to our listeners. Unfortunately, it had to happen at some stage, didn't it? You can't win every game you play, but what an amazing record away from home. Again, we talk about home ground advantage and playing in front of your home fans and, you know, protecting your home ground in all sports and making it hard for any team to come and play there. But the Kings, well, they've been the opposite. They've really enjoyed their travelling, and I don't know, maybe the team's together more and you're more focused when you're away, when you're on the road in the NBL than when you're back at home. But either way, I don't think they can complain. I think they're in a good position. They're playing great basketball, and I'm sure they'll find a way to get a win their next game.
On the eve of the first test of the summer, usually, yes. You know, so much anticipation. You love, you know, test eve, but it just doesn't have that feeling. But, you know, let's face it, we're playing tomorrow. We'll get into it when the test gets underway. But
I hope so. I am. I've got to say, you know, I'm worried for this summer of cricket. I feel like our World Cup campaign of 2020 wasn't as good as we would have liked. So that sort of just faded out from a fan's perspective. The 3 1 days against England weren't on free-to-air television, and England didn't really show up. So that's sort of gone by the by. And now what's normally the biggest part of the summer, the first test match, we're playing against a team that there's not much expectation there for them. You know, I hope some players stand up in this West Indies team. I hope we see they've got a couple of good young quicks. I hope we get to see them really fire up. And hopefully they can find a way with the bat to score some runs against this Australian attack. But yeah, I think nervous is the right word for me. I'm nervous how this certainly the start of this Australian test summer is going to go.
One thing I do love about the Perth test, Loz, is the timing of it for us over here on the East Coast. Perfect timing. And just nestle back and sit there with a glass of wine at night and watch the cricket.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to the cricket season. Even though I think it could be over in a couple of days against West Indies. And it's interesting reading in the paper and Puppet have a better idea of how the pitch is going to unfold, but they're talking about leaving, you know, 10 mil of grass on there, and there's some talk about it, you know, being 37 degrees and cracks starting to appear. And what type of sort of wicket do you think we can expect, Pup? And well, if it is what they're predicting, whether it could be hooping around or cracking up, how's it going to play out?
Yeah, well, it's different Optus Stadium to the Wacker. The Wacker, I think, has its own reputation in regards to pace, bounce, and how it plays. Optus Stadium is a drop-in pitch, so I'm pretty sure they still grow the pitches at the Wacker, or they use that same grass, I'm pretty sure. So they're trying to produce as similar conditions as they can, but it's still not, you know, anytime it's a drop-in pitch, it is different to, I guess, the one that he's actually produced on the ground. So if they're thinking it's going to be 37 degrees, that's why they'll have to leave grass on it, because they won't want it to dry out too much. Yeah. And even if it doesn't crack, if they start it without grass, you'll see it'll become really dry and it'll crumble. So that's probably why they're thinking that. 10 mils is a lot. That's a lot of grass, which to me means day one is going to be very hard for batting. It doesn't guarantee swing, but it'll guarantee seam, which I think can be harder than facing swing bowling. So if they leave that much grass, both teams will consider bowling first. Well, certainly Australia will consider bowling first, I reckon, assuming that it might only go 3 days. But if they also think it's going to be 37 degrees consistently, you nearly want runs on the board, because if it does dry out and cracks start to open up, anything can happen. So, yeah, mate, I'm a little bit like everyone else. So I don't really know what to expect. I'd probably got to have a look at it first, but 10 mils is a lot of grass. So they must be expecting heat.
I remember, I think it was the 2013-14 Ashes pub. Admittedly, was at the Wacker. Yeah. But, you know, you're getting the same sunshine, aren't you? There
the Wacker used to crack up really big. Like, you used to get, you get cracks. And again, generally it wasn't in the area where the ball pitched all the time. It could be down the stump line. It could be more on the leg side. But there were times you were out there batting and you could rest your bat in the crack and let go of your bat. Like, it just stand up in the crack on day four or day five at the Wacker. Because it does get so hot there. But look, that's traditional Wacker pitch. I don't know if Optus Stadium can produce that. But if it does, then, you know, you just got to deal with it. But I think a lot of the times it's mental more than actually ball hitting crack, deviating and getting you out. I can't think of too many occasions through my career when I was batting that, you know, that crack got you out. It was, a ball might have hit the crack. You watch it, you know, move a meter and you go, oh my God, what just happened there? And then the next one, you're a little bit hesitant. You don't quite get to the pitch of the ball. You hold back a bit and you nick it. But it actually doesn't move, doesn't do anything. It's the mental side of what you see in front of you. And then if a ball does hit the crack and goes by, how you deal with letting that go and just concentrating on the ball that's being bowled.
But because of that hot weather that, you know, they're anticipating up to 10 mils of grass.
Yeah, it's a lot. I think if I remember correctly, I think they used to leave 6 mils. Mm. I remember talking to SCG curator, Adelaide Oval curator, because I remember Adelaide Oval when I played was generally as good for batting as possible. And it was the type of wicket that started good but deteriorated, and then spin and reverse swing was massive. And then when they changed that pitch and it became a drop-in pitch, they were trying to do the same, but they couldn't do it. So now they've changed their style of play at Adelaide and they leave more grass on. So when they first started that drop-in wicket, I think it went to 7 or 8 mils and they were trying to work out the balance. But generally around that 6 mils is what I was accustomed to seeing at the start of a test match. So 10 seems like a lot. But again, you'd like to think on a drop-in wicket, I don't know, it might be different to, like I say, the old Wacker pitch. But they'll know. They've played enough cricket there. Western Australia Cricket Association will not want this game over in 2 or 3 days. They'll want it to go longer than that, and they will be talking to Optus Stadium to try and produce a good cricket wicket.
Mitch from Robertson on the text line. Hey, boys, am I the only one that is pumped for the cricket? I can't wait for the test. I'll be watching as much as I can and hoping I can drive up for a day at the New Year's test. After the 12 months we've had weather-wise, bring on summer, says Mitch from Robertson, who is a tragic. Mitch, good on you, Mitch. The class half-full
approach.
We
need more
approach.
Of that, yes.
Beautiful.
Love it.
Bring it on. The market with Tab for the first test, as you can imagine, the West Indies are very, very long odds to get a result out of this one. Australia are $1.14, and the Windies $10 to cause what would be a shock. And the draw paying $8.50. The Windies actually beat England at home earlier this year. But different kettle of fish playing in the Caribbean than playing, obviously.
Let me tell you right now, if Australia loses this series, mate,
could you imagine?
World War V will break out. Mate, I might get a chance. I might get called back to play. Hey, Australia is not losing this series.
Listen,
I take that back. I'm not getting called back for anything, let me tell you. Australia will not lose this series. They will not lose a test match. They can't. All they need to do is have the right attitude, which I'm pretty sure they will. I think the players know where they sit. They know, you know, they've got to play a good brand of cricket, entertaining cricket. They've got to beat the West Indies convincingly. And you're not preparing for what comes next. But in the back of their minds, you know, South Africa, I think, will be much tougher and should be much tougher than the West Indies. So batters will want to be informed going into that series. Bowlers will want to be taking wickets. And you still, every test you play, you're fighting for selection. There's someone that wants your spot that's not in that 11. Only 11 players get picked. So the individual will still want to perform. There's no doubt about it. And, mate, especially if you're going to get a wicket that's got 10 mils of grass on it, it's the bowlers can still bowl a good ball. So the batters have to be on. There's no doubt about it.
Kemar Roach still going around?
He's still there. Yeah. Roach,
he's still got that chain.
He certainly does. That big thing, gold thing around his neck. Jeez. Mate, imagine how heavy it is. Great fella, Kemar Roach. Awesome fella. Used to be lightning in his day. He could bowl 150 Ks. Yeah. Good fast bouncer because he's only short. Quite skiddy, so it's hard to pick up his bouncer. But yeah, I think he's lost a bit of pace now. But still, accurate. Like I say, if there's enough in the wicket, he angles the ball back into the right-hander, he could be tough enough.
I'm seeing, I see a Chanderpaul.
Yeah, this is Chanderpaul's. I think it's his son or nephew. His son. Left-hand batter. Right. Look, mate, he looks exactly the same.
Unbelievable.
Same technique, same stance.
Really? Oh.
Yeah, it looks exactly the same, Loz. He just made 100, I think, against the PM's 11. Good player. Talented young player. I spoke to Brian Lara about him the other day, actually. And he's a baby. Yeah, he hasn't played a test match yet. So hopefully he gets the chance to make his debut and hopefully goes on and has half the career his dad did because his dad was a genius.
Because that was one of the most unique batting styles in world cricket, wasn't it?
Certainly was.
Very open.
He made it work, Shivy. And the thing about Chanderpaul, I think, record-wise, statistic-wise, is the second leading run scorer for the West Indies of all time behind Brian Lara. So he was that good, Chanderpaul. Yeah. I know he didn't stand out like Viv Richards or Brian Lara or Richie Richardson, but in regards to performances, mate, he was unbelievable. And all around the world. Scored big hundreds against Australia, in Australia. You know, did well in India against India. Amazing record, Shivy. England, scored a lot of runs in England. Brilliant player.
Yeah, you're right. He finished just behind Brian Lara.
Mate, it was nearly
34 matches more than Lara.
But there was nearly an argument. When he got dropped, a lot of people think in the West Indies that he got dropped so he couldn't beat Brian Lara's record. That the selectors said, nah, you cannot beat Brian Lara's record, and they dropped him. Him and Brian are very good mates, get on very well, but it's only a matter of, it's a handful of runs.
45 runs.
There you go, 45 runs, yeah. So, it's unbelievable how good a player he was.
You would have him in the same class as Brian Lara.
Well,
I know his record.
Yeah,
he had a wonderful career, but when you
he didn't look as good as Brian. Brian's my favourite player. Yeah. My favourite all-time player. I love the way he played. I loved his style. I thought he was great against the quicks and the spinners. Yeah, so I probably wouldn't, but, mate, his record is phenomenal.
Oh, look at these names. This is West Indies' top six or seven most run scorers of all time. Lara, Chanderpaul, Richards, Sobers, Greenidge, Lloyd, Haynes, and then Chris Gayle.
Unbelievable.
You know, Gayle only played 103 tests. Only 103 tests. Yeah. But I'm looking compared
to... Well, he's still playing, Gayle.
I'm looking compared to Chanderpaul. Yeah. Imagine how many runs he would have made. Yeah, Chanderpaul had 164 tests. Yeah, only, please.
Oh, no. 100 tests.
Only because I saw him doing...
Mate, he's still playing. He played in some charity game or token game the other day. He got
Victoria.
90. Yeah.
He's dancing as he's warming up.
I think he was playing in the... Like, I think Chris is 43 or 44. I think he's still playing in like the T10 league, the 10 over league in the UAE or something like that. So
he'll hang around to the 5 over league comes too.
Yeah, and he'll probably dominate that. He'll find a way to make 100 in 5 overs.
Tell you what, fellas, it's interesting going through the papers today, and you only have to look at them to realise how important it is to have the Socceroos at the World Cup. In the Telegraph today, there's not a rugby league story. That would be the first time, I think, this year.
Ever.
And there is Socceroos everywhere.
Great.
How good does that... I mean, that is fantastic for the game. I mean, obviously, it's the quietest time in the year, rugby league-wise. We've just finished the longest season ever having a World Cup.
Yeah, the footy's allowed to have a week off.
If we're not at the... If the Socceroos aren't at the World Cup...
Well, no, then we'd be talking about cricket. What do you mean, mate?
Yeah,
this is what normally happens. Footy season finishes and you go into cricket season.
But here we
thank
are
God we got the Soccer World
thank
Cup.
Thank goodness.
Yeah, I know.
Because we're going into a cricket series that we're mildly interested in. We've got, obviously, the downtime in league. And if the Socceroos aren't at the World Cup, there's not much doing.
There's so much sport going on. We would have found something. But I agree. I think it's awesome. Been... How positive has it been?
So good. So yeah. Back page of the Daily Telegraph, Kuehl Runnings is the headline. Legend backs Arnie's underdogs to eclipse this golden generation. So Harry Kuehl over there commentating for SBS. And he's telling the Telegraph here and Code Sports, well, this is a good crop of players that could surpass the 2006 group, as a lot of our players should be peaking at the next World Cup in 2026. On Denmark, Kuehl says, if we don't win the midfield battle, we have no chance of winning. And it's put to Kuehl in this article as well, whether he'd like the Socceroos job one day. And he just goes, why not?
Yeah,
has a romantic notion about it, doesn't it? Harry Kuehl coaching the Socceroos.
He's coaching. He's into coaching. So why wouldn't he want to do that? So, fair play. I think it's great. They've got, obviously, Harry's over there commentating, but you've seen he's been around the team. They've got Timmy Cahill's over there. So, to me, I think they've done this well. I think Graham Arnold deserves a lot of credit
for actually
pulling a lot of the past great players back and getting them involved and, you know, even making them feel a part of it or getting their advice or allowing their experience to be passed on to this new team. So I think that's what all smart coaches do. Mm. You know, you've got people that have been in their shoes, stood in their place. Then why would you not use that? It's for the youngsters. Imagine Tim Cahill walking into the change room and being able to ask him whatever you want. That's what you want.
By the way, this game, Mossy's at this game. We're going to speak to him later this morning. Portugal up against Uruguay. Uruguay, our nemesis, of course. But Portugal, Cristiano Ronaldo, $1.90 favourites with tab. Uruguay, $4.20. The draw, $3.50. And this match is about to kick off. Isn't it funny, though, Loz? Like last week after the France game, the mood was, let's face it, downcast. And there we have... Barely 4 days later, a win over Tunisia, and we're comparing them to 2006. No.
Yeah. Oh, look, I think realistically, regardless of this, whether it's this side or any other Australian side, we wouldn't have expected to beat France in a World Cup.
No.
So you can put that 2006 team against this team, and they still wouldn't have been against the French team, and they wouldn't have been expected to win. But they turned up, recovered from that loss, beat Tunisia, and are now in the situation where we all hoped that they would be. So I think they've done a remarkable job with all the criticism that they've copped to be able to put that aside, continue to work hard, get the result that keeps them in the comp at the moment, and now they have to get a draw or win to go through to the next stage. I think they've done very, very well to get to where they are now, because a lot of people doubted them.
Back page of the Herald, Golden Regeneration is the headline there, and they're on the back page of the Australian, underdogs to be ruthless against Danes. And yeah, we are significant underdogs for this game too, by the way. Yeah.
But you know what happens if we lose? Arnie's gone. Get rid of them all.
We're back to where we were after the France game.
Yeah, I'm not sure. I'm not sure about that. I think Australian fans are absolutely stoked with what this team has achieved. I think, there's hope.
I think we're pretty realistic where we're at.
I think we are. But I think Arnie has now got the respect that he deserves. And I think no matter what, he will leave on his own accord. He will make that decision if he doesn't want to re-sign. Sounds like he's not going to want to re-sign. But I don't think that's the case now. I think the France game, they copped their stick, and we took for granted that we'd qualified for a World Cup and how special that was. But I think to win the other day, I think all Australian fans are super proud of what they've achieved.
Definitely. Remember, we've won 3 games at a World Cup ever.
I agree. Mate, remember, Italy is not at this World Cup. Yeah. Italy, can you imagine that country? It's like India in cricket not making the Cricket World Cup. Can you imagine that?
Well, my Italian mate, Vinny Trippadino, he can barely watch any of it.
There you go.
That's
exactly right.
He's
filthy. We've done, they have done this country super proud, in my opinion. Yep.
Yeah, 2006 Japan, 2010 Serbia, and 2022 Tunisia. Our only ever wins at a World Cup. And on the game Thursday morning with Tab, 2 a.m., the Socceroos are $7. Denmark $1.50. The draw is paying $4. Give us a call, 1353 53. Send us a text, 0419 767 272. Just at the World Cup, and we're, 8 minutes in here. Portugal and Uruguay is scoreless. Now, we've had plenty of goals overnight, well, in two of the games. Cameroon and Serbia finished 3-3. Ghana beat South Korea 3-2. Brazil, they're through to the next round. They've conjured a 1-0 win over Switzerland. Casemiro with the goal in the 83rd minute as well. So the tournament favourites are through to the next round. Now, tomorrow morning, huge game tomorrow morning. England and Wales. And that's the 6 a.m. game tomorrow morning as well. So later this morning, we've got Phil Moss on the show. We've also got, and he's at this game at the moment, Portugal-Uruguay, so I'll speak to him after that. And, former Socceroo, Melbourne Victory, great Archie Thompson coming up after 8 o'clock as well. We'll preview the first test with Stewie Clark after 7 o'clock, Adam Pengilly. We've also got young, he's the Australian under-18s 100-metre record holder, Sebastian Sultana. Late last month, he ran 10.27. He's 17 years old. So at the same age, he's quicker than Rowan Browning, Matt Shervington, and Patrick Johnson. So we'll speak to the youngster later this morning, Brad Davidson, coming up as well. I've just shown Clarkey on the Manly Cricket on their Twitter page. One of the worst leaves you've ever seen. But first baller. Hit middle and leg.
Yeah, it wasn't a great leave. I've seen some bad ones. I was involved in one bad one in the 2007 World Cup. A slower ball. Oh, you were talking... No, Simon Jones ripped my pegs out. Reverse swing.
That was a great delivery.
That was okay. There was one in the World Cup in 2007. It might have been James Franklin. It was a slower ball from him, and my body just froze. I went forward. I got done by the slower ball, and then it was like... It wasn't real. My whole body froze, and all I did was just watch it. And I think it smacked into, I'll say off stump, but it might have actually been middle and off stump. But this one's pretty bad. Pitch middle, hit middle. But there was the length as well of that other one. There it is. Look at that. Look at that. My body just froze. I think I stepped away. I was waiting to line it up and go over the offside. Ooh, middle and off. That's pretty bad, Mitta. So I'm not going to sit here and criticise anyone's bad leaves. It happens. Sometimes you get a bit of brain freeze.
We're playing for Australia, to be fair. Now, also, I didn't get to the back page, also the Herald here. A big call. Warner warns Green over hidden IPL cost is the headline there. So David Warner yesterday asked about Cameron Green at the pre-test media conference, and... Well, he was saying that, you know, basically for the longevity of him and his career, Cameron Green is a big call for him as a youngster. And just acknowledge, you know, Glenn Maxwell, when he spent basically a year around the circuit, and he came back for the home summer and he was just completely cooked. So, he's just basically warning Cameron Green of the, you know, the challenge he's got ahead. Yeah. And Green, he acknowledges that his body could get pushed to the limit, but he's confident he can get through it. So it's all but certain he's headed to the IPL.
Yeah, if he decides to go to the IPL, is a part of a franchise where he plays every game, he's not going to be able to play every game for Australia. Mm. It's a given. Mm. He's going to need a break physically and mentally. Remember, he bats, bowls, and fields. He's a genuine all-rounder. So what I mean by fields as well, he's in the game. They'll want him in 2020 cricket, they'll want him at backward point or cover or mid-off because he's a very good fielder. They'll want him to run the boundary. In test cricket, he's going to field at gully or in the slips because he's got great hands. He's, you know, in the IPL, he's probably going to open the bowling. He might even open the batting. You know, so he's going to be involved in the game all the time. That's going to take physical and mental strain. And I think even if he doesn't go to the IPL, though, he's going to miss some cricket for Australia. he's going to be fatigued. He's not going to be able to do everything. And we see that with all young players, especially young bowlers. They get injured. So, yeah, the more he bowls, the more likely it is that his body's going to need a break at some stage. It's a tough one. Whatever he decides to do, you have to respect. No one is in a position to sit here and say, don't go to the IPL and take the money. I'm sure all Australian cricket fans would want him to prioritise playing for Australia. But he has no guarantee in his career as well that he's gonna you know play 10 years and make his $50 million. There's no contract there that says that. His contract will be 2 years. So Cricket Australia will say, yeah, we guarantee you 2 year contract. Then what happens if he gets bad stresses and his career's over? He's missed out on $6 million in those 2 years from the IPL for not going.
He alluded to that yesterday. He said, "I just want to live in the present."
I think as a player, it's the balance. I think it's the balance. I think you need to respect that you don't know what's going to happen tomorrow. I think that's a good way to live. But it's like us now in life, right? Everyone goes, enjoy today because you don't know what's going to happen tomorrow. That doesn't mean you go and blow all your money today. You know, you're still saving to buy a house or you're still saving to support your kids or whatever it is. But it's that attitude of respect that life is short. So I think his attitude's right. I think he's looking at it the right way. And, Matt, he might play 1 or 2 years of IPL and say, you know what, I'm going to have a couple of years off. My body does need a break. Well, now I have had an injury, but I think as well, he's a youngster and he's heard so much about it and he's probably never seen dollars like, you know, if he goes and gets a $2 million deal for a seven-week tournament, he's probably never seen that in his life. So you can't blame him. 2 years of IPL... Let's say he gets $3 million a year. It's $6 million.
Yeah.
2 years of IPL, he sets his life up.
Yeah, definitely does.
You know?
Well, he got Loz back from his little trip over across the ditch. How was NZ, Loz? Take us through it.
No, it was pretty good, actually. It was great to catch up with family and good to see everyone. But, yeah, we didn't really do a great deal. But, you know, to be perfectly honest, we ate, we drank. We celebrated Karen's birthday. And, you know, Michelle's family, they've done it tough over the last few years because she's lost both her brothers and she's lost a father in a short space of time. And it was Karen's 60th and she's a twin. So one of the boys weren't there, obviously. But, yeah, no, it was great. It was really good to get over there and celebrate with the family and be around good people and good friends. The weather played up on us a little bit, as you could expect over there in Auckland. A bit of rain around, but no, we really enjoyed it. Got home a reasonable hour last night, about 8, 9 o'clock. So, yeah, into bed, up early this morning and straight back into it.
Ah, look at him. He's a soldier pup.
Fresh as a daisy.
Look at him. Late last week, Loz, story on Origin eligibility. It emerged that Samoa and Tonga will remain Tier 2 nations. In fact, they'll be that way for the next decade. And while the ARL Commission's set to review it, I guess surely now we can expect Origin eligibility to stay as it is. Now, the International Rugby League Chairman, Troy Grant, he says that tiering takes into account much more than on-field performance. It also considers governance, participation levels and domestic competition. So when you think of those factors, well, you doubt that Samoa and Tonga will ever be Tier 2. Because naturally, all their best players are going to come over here. So they're not going to sort of develop their local competitions, etc. Because they're all going to come and play over here to get in the NRL.
No, well, exactly right, Mido. And all the money at the moment is in the NRL. It's not in the international setup. It's with State of Origin and it's with the NRL clubs and the competition. So I think I've made my point very clear right from day one. And I won't deviate from that. Yet, that's just my opinion on State of Origin. Plenty of people will tell me that I am wrong and plenty of people will argue that it should be opened up to a lot more other people and allow them the opportunity to play State of Origin regardless of what country they represent. Obviously I'm open to any discussion, but where I sit at the moment on it, I think it's still a pathway to the Australian jersey. I've really enjoyed what Samoa have done at the last World Cup or this World Cup. I enjoyed what Tonga did at the previous World Cup. I think it's great that these nations are starting to get players representing their country and they feel very proud and very honoured to do that. But I want to see the New South Wales and Queensland jersey for the player that wants to represent Australia. That's just where I am. It's the way I was brought up. I know times are different, but for me, I want to see the pathway there for our players to be able to play State of Origin and given an opportunity to play for Australia first and foremost. Because, as I said, we wouldn't have seen a guy like Tommy Dearden or Ruben Cotter or a Tom Gilbert play for Queensland this year. There's no way in the world, if we opened it up, to allow players to play Origin for English or New Zealand players or whatever, we would have seen these players play. They would have been left out if they changed the eligibility rules. So I know where they're at the moment, but I still think your first and foremost, your allegiance is to Australia, and then in that World Cup year, if you miss out on selection in that Australian side, then you are therefore eligible to go and represent another nation.
I just wonder whether the tiering system's even, like, is there even any point to it if, you know, you have a Samoa making a World Cup final, but it's never going to change anyway?
No. But do you think it's right, State of Origin, if you have guys, and Victor Radley has chosen to play for England, and that's great, and as the rules suggest at the moment, because he's played with a Tier 1 nation, he is not eligible to play for State of Origin. But is it right that he's not allowed to play and others are?
Well, that's...
just because he's playing for England.
That's the point. I'm starting to almost gravitate to Brad Fittler's... his idea is if you're playing junior footy, regardless of your country, in New South Wales or Queensland, before the age of 13, you are eligible to play for New South Wales or Queensland, whether you have that heritage.
Yeah. So I'm still against that. I'm still thinking that, for me personally, I want to see it as a pathway to the Australian side. I think we have to change international football rather than changing State of Origin, because I think you'll get a situation where you'll have plenty of players from other nations playing State of Origin. And I just don't know whether a souped-up game of the best players is going to connect with the fans of New South Wales and Queensland.
And
I think we've seen that in the past with the All-Stars.
Brad,
you know, you've brought the best players together, but they sort of didn't really have anything to play for, really. Mm. They just put a good team together to play against an Indigenous side who had plenty to play for.
Brad from Broadbeach says, totally agree, Laurie. State of Origin is what it started as, state versus state. It's not broken. Why change it? You nailed it about Cotter, Gilbert, Dearden, etc. Morning, James.
Yeah, g'day. I was just heard you say, you know, there's no real need for domestic comps. I probably disagree with you there. I think other cards have got domestic comps around the world. So I can't see why rugby league can't have, you know, comps in Fiji and all those areas like that. I understand the gravity, you know, the pull for Australian comps, but it's clear that rugby league is an attractive enough sport even to play on an amateur basis. So I'm saying that the rugby league's probably right in the fact that domestic competitions should be one of the things you should have, right? And that's in my opinion, the more the merrier.
Yeah, we weren't saying they shouldn't have domestic comps. What I'm saying is, how can Samoa and Tonga become Tier 1 nations under the...
Yeah, well, that's probably one of the requirements. Like, if they get a domestic comp, right, it's the more the merrier. You're going to have a groundswell. You're going to have, a stronger rugby league influence, right? So you're not going to just rely on the guys playing in Australia. You're going to have an interest for the code itself within those nations, which should be happening.
But James, if you're a gun player in Samoa or Tonga, where are you going to end up?
You will end up probably in the best comp, which is the Australian Rugby League, right? You got to respect that. And obviously it is. I mean, I had a crack as a young boy, as a country boy. I always wanted to play for the NRL, and, you know, I missed out back in my day, but only just. And that's that's still a good thing. So, you know, you have guys, you know, competitions, women's and men's competitions in Tonga, Samoa, and wherever you want, right? That will make it even better for rugby league overall, because then you're going to probably, there's a big chance that scouts from Australia will probably discover guys easier to over in those domestic competitions as well, like they do in New Zealand when they find players as well. But I believe the more the merrier. I can see the point of the international rugby league. You need domestic competitions. They should be, you know, like, and I'm thinking the way that, you know, the Samoans went in Tonga, I reckon there's going to be a groundswell for those countries within those islands and those nations to have domestic comps playing in their own leagues. And then obviously the aspiration is to play in the best competition, which is like, even in soccer, you know, you like to play in the Premier League soccer. I mean, rugby league should be able to do that too.
Yeah, well, thanks for the call, James. Well, I mean, Loz, Tim Sheens did one of the great, you've told us many a time, one of the great recruiting jobs ever, didn't he? Heading into, was it the 94 season?
So 93. So we came out of a hapless year in 92. We made three premierships in a row. We lost a lot of players at the end of 91. And then 92, we didn't make the finals. And the club was rebuilding. So Sheensy went over to, I think they called it the Pacific Cup at that stage. And he brought back with him four players. And those four players were Noah Andruku, Ruben Wiki, Quinton Pongia, and Johnny Lomax. And we went from being a side that was ordinary in 92 to being a team that possibly could have won in 93. And we ended up winning it in 94. But all four of those guys played a huge role in getting the Raiders back to where we needed to be. And I remember asking Sheensy, and there was a few of us, you know, well, what are we doing recruitment-wise? And he said, well, I brought these guys back from overseas. And we're like, yeah, well, we've never heard of them. So we're unsure of how they were going to go. And he said, don't worry. Don't worry. They'll be good. They'll be good. And I remember he told us to get there early. We must have played, we played Balmain. It was at Leichhardt Oval. It was under 23s. So he says, come and have a look at this young Ruben Wiki play. And Ruben got sent off in the first 30 seconds, I think it was, of the game. And we didn't get to see him that day. But we got to see him. We got to see him a bit more after that. But, you know, once you got to play with them, trained with them, and saw what they had to offer, it was great to have them a part of our club. And I think Johnny and Quinton, to be fair, I think they'd played for the Kiwis. They had played for the Kiwis, but they obviously were playing and representing the Kiwis from New Zealand. But they certainly made a massive impact at our club.
Did they what? All right, to the big issues. Tim from Summerhill on the text line. Morning, lads. Geez, loving all the sports we've got at the moment. The World Cup football reminds me, though, of my greatest issue with our rugby and league team. Socks. I know footballers have shin guards and need them kept in place, partially by socks kept high. But rugby and league teams always have their socks around their ankles, even at kickoff. It's not as though their socks drift down. They start down. Team managers and coaches should really require their players to present properly and pull their socks up. It might be through change. Many teams need garters and not, hang on, garters and not rocket science. Ugh. These rugby and league players with their socks around their ankles look like they couldn't give a flying. So why should they be earning big bickies in the first place? Always listening, says Tim at Summerhill. Socks up. I'm a socks up person, pup. These days, you would have been.
Stop. Don't look, speak to Loz about this. I'm not here.
Yeah, Loz, you were socks up.
I'm not listening to this.
I was socks up, Middo. I was also jersey tucked in. I wanted to look like a footy player. But I think that's just part and parcel of what players enjoy and what they prefer. I mean, I used to always have that black electrical tape.
Yeah.
So you'd wrap it around your sock at the top part of your calf to keep your socks up, and then you'd wrap it around your boots so your laces didn't come undone. But everyone's different. Some players like to play with their socks down. I don't think it's a massive issue, but, you know, obviously some people care and they want their players to look like professionals. But in today's environment, the players, I think, enjoy having their socks down a little bit.
No comment, Pup.
Zero.
38th minute, Portugal and Uruguay still scoreless over in the World Cup in Qatar. The results overnight. And, well, this morning, Brazil ensured they're through to the next round with a 1-0 victory against Switzerland. An 83rd-minute goal to Casemiro ensured their progression in the 3 points there this morning. Ghana, 3-2 over South Korea, and a thriller as well between Serbia and Cameroon. That finished 3-3 overnight. Last night, the Sydney Kings were beaten on the road for the first time in a long time, 94-88. They lost to the Cairns Taipan, so their winning road run ends at 17, the Kings. And the Taipans, great fight back from them. They trailed by 8 with just over 3 minutes left and reeled the Kings in. First test tomorrow, Australia and the West Indies in Perth. And on the text line, morning guys, there's no way this test will go 3 days. The broadcasters won't allow it. Whoever wins the toss, they put the Aussies in. Australia will bat for 2 days, then they'll bowl the Windies out in a day. Won't enforce the follow-on, as Aussies will bat another day, then bowl the Windies out end of day four and into day five. Broadcaster's dream. Cheers, Lapo from Newey. Can you just...
Viewer's dream as well. You get to see 5 days of cricket. Love it.
Can you just dispel the conspiracy theories, Pup, that teams are influenced by broadcasters, etc., as far as test cricket is concerned?
Well, I can't speak for others, Mino. I don't know what's going down these days, but I never had a conversation with anybody at Channel 9 when I was captain of Australia about whether I should win the toss and bat or bowl first and how we should play the game. That never happened in my career. But yeah, like I say, I'm not in the change room now, so I don't know how it works.
Yep. Okay, there you go. Well, it's tomorrow, and apparently we're going to see a huge covering of grass. And, beautiful time zone for us, obviously, being a Perth test. And then you just roll into the Socceroos Denmark. Well, that is, into Thursday morning. And by the way, pubs that are showing Socceroos v Denmark.
What time kickoff?
Apparently allowed to stay open until 5 a.m. 2 a.m. is kickoff, our time.
2 a.m. Thursday morning.
Thursday morning.
Oh, just not right, is it, for us?
Oh, it's a dreadful time for us. Oh, dreadful.
What sort of one of those ones do I get up and stay up through the morning, or do you...
Well, we got to drive to Mudgee as well, Loz.
Oh, when are we going to Mudgee?
Thursday.
Oh, that's right. Thursday night.
I think I'm going Friday morning, Loz. I think I'm leaving.
You're not.
I think
he's getting a space shuttle.
No, I think I'm going to leave mine at 2 a.m. and get there in time.
Don't
I reckon.
No.
Well, our listeners are telling me yesterday on text that I can get there in 3 hours from where I am, from my house or my area, and they're telling me which way to go as well for less roadworks. Apparently, there's a sinkhole somewhere.
Well, I know you love getting up early in the morning.
I think I'm better at driving in the morning than I am. Like, I couldn't cruise down at 7 o'clock at night or 6 o'clock at night. I'd fall asleep.
Right.
So...
Oh, that's a big effort. And then go home on Friday.
Yeah, and then that's the only big thing effort. I do radio and turn around and go back. 3 hours each way. Let me think about it.
Oh, I'd think about that one.
Yeah. Let me think about it.
Loz, multi-report after your absence on Friday.
Yeah, what happened?
So it was a Brad Davidson. It was a Brad Davidson / Matthew Burke double.
Right.
Davo had Mission Phoenix to run top two. It actually won its race at Rose Hill on Saturday. Into, would you believe, Berkey went Wales 1-12 against the Wallabies. And, with 20 minutes to go, it looked like Wales are going to win 13-plus because they're up 34-13 with just over 20 minutes to go. And then the Wallabies have reeled them in to win 39-34 with a stunning 26 unanswered points. So not only has it blown up the multi... but the Wallabies have pulled off a miraculous victory. So, unfortunately, I think you were copying some stick on the text line yesterday regardless, even though you had absolutely nothing to do with it.
Oh, that's just part of the deal in this business, Mido. But I'm glad to see, you know, other people having a crack at the multi and, you know,
and losing.
Trying to do their best, but failing, you know.
Yeah.
That's all it is. It's a failure. So that a strike goes against their name. I'll take it back on this weekend. It's my responsibility, my little baby. So I'll look after it. I'll protect it.
Yeah, I'm guessing you wouldn't have seen one race over the weekend, did you, Loz?
No, I didn't, mate. No. To be fair, I watched a bit of the Socceroos. I watched the last 30 minutes of the Socceroos game on Sunday morning, and that was about the only bit of sport I saw.
And fair enough, too. Now, we've got Denny Williams coming up. Just on the socks down thing, Mitch from Robertson used to tell the story of a player, Mitch says. If the tough old prop had his socks down, you knew he was going to remove your head. If an outside back had them down, he probably couldn't catch the ball, but was definitely going to hit you with a quality late shot and could probably throw him when the scuffle broke out. There you go, Mitch from Robertson. Loz Clarke, Yumido, Jeff Robbo Robinson used to run out of the tunnel with his socks around his ankles. Didn't affect the way he played, says John from Moorbank. What's this? Dom from Newcastle is blowing up anyway.
What's he blowing up
keep
at,
the
Dom?
Text coming, 0419 767 272. Now, also, Tim Zhu, he departed yesterday for his 8-week camp he's having in the US ahead of his undisputed world title showdown against Jamel Charlo in Vegas in late January. And he says he's going hunting. It's hunting season, he says. His camp's set to cost him $250,000. So no stone unturned. It's according to his manager anyway, $250,000. To ensure he's in tip-top shape. $3 outsider with Tab, Charlo, $1.38. That's going to be... this is legacy-defining, isn't it, really, this fight?
Man.
This is huge. This is everything for him.
I think he'd surprise a lot of people, Tim, if he wins his fight, put it that way. He's done very well so far, but I think this is a different league.
Oh, yeah, this is by far the big test, isn't it? So actually, it should be when you're fighting for a world title.
I caught up with Jeff Fenwick yesterday. I went and he showed me his new belt and had a chat to him, and he's absolutely over the moon. So it was great to see him, and I was talking to him about, obviously, the Tim Zhu fight. And again, I think Jeff's always got that soft spot for Aussie boxers and always tries to find a way that, the Aussie can do it if they just that fight. But even he said, mate, this is a different league for Tim. If he's good enough to win this, then this will be defining for his career.
On your heroes and villains yesterday, boys, because I did see this. It was a 5-minute clip I saw. I didn't even know there was such a thing as PFL, which is sort of a it's like the Professional Fighters League, it's called, but it's like UFC.
Okay.
We had an Australian winner title over there on the weekend, overseas, bloke by the name of Rob Wilkinson.
Okay.
Did that get much discussion yesterday?
Didn't know that at all.
Yeah, a guy from Tasmania.
Amazing.
But yeah, I've never heard of this tournament before, but it's PFL, Professional Fighters League. And I think he was in the light heavyweight division at Madison Square Garden. They have 6 fights, and they're all worth $1 million.
Okay.
And it must be a round robin. I think it's a round robin situation throughout the year where they fight, and then they get the 2 best out of the division, and they fight off for the prize money at the end of the
And it was in Madison Square Garden.
In Madison Square Garden.
Okay.
There you go.
I think his name was Rob Wilkinson.
Okay.
So I saw that on the weekend, and he's the first Australian to win it.
Okay.
So there you go.
Keep an eye on him.
Yeah. Keep an eye on him.
Get him on the show.
Googling as we speak.
Time to talk some racing, though. And great performance from the Denny Williams-trained Marsabit, winning the 2,000-metre, the Country Classic at any old odds, 240-1. Amy McLucas was in the saddle and lucky enough to have Denny on the line now. Denny, good morning to you.
Good morning, Middo. Good morning, boys.
And Marsabit, how's he come through it? And how likely is he to back up on Saturday? I saw you've nommed him again at Rosehill.
Yeah, Middo, look. You've got to take opportunities when they come. It is, our thoughts. We will run Saturday and back him up. So just still enjoying the win from Saturday.
Yeah, Denny, were you confident before the race?
Actually, I was.
Good.
But I believe it or not, I didn't back him. I went there and I didn't have any cash on me. And as trainers do, we get that busy. I didn't get time to get to the FBOS machine to get any money out, but I was.
So Munsey and the team got it wrong then, Denny. 81, they opened
well,
up.
It wasn't my money, but I was willing to tip anyone that wanted to listen to me.
Ah, outstanding. Yeah, wish we had a cent on, but we didn't, obviously. I saw you took a few to the Sapphire Coast yesterday. Any we can follow out of that bunch there yesterday?
Look, it was one of those meetings. It was very on pace bias. Very hard to have a bet and back a winner with confidence there. It was just very leader dominated yesterday, and we didn't have a lot of luck, but yeah, we live on and fight on, and we've got some nice horses coming through, so plenty of races coming around.
Get to those horses, but I've got to ask you about your stable star, Shelby 66, 17 runs he's had this year, Denny, running second there at Flemington on Cup Day. What's next for him?
Well, look, we've turned him out. Yeah. We'll bring him back for the autumn. He's done a good job. He took a long while to get fit. His rating after winning the Galaxy made it very difficult to place him, and we ran him in races that perhaps weren't suitable, but they were the only options that we had, and just took him forever to get fit. And it was good to see him run second at Flemington on Cup Day. And now the weather's dried up and the tracks have got hard. We'll give him a break.
Yeah, you gave him a breakthrough, a bit of a breakthrough winter as well. Can you put your finger on why it took him so long to get going in the spring then, I guess, but obviously culminating in that great performance on Cup Day?
Oh, look, he's a very gross horse. He's difficult to get fit. There's numerous issues that we deal with him, you know, predominantly feet. But he's not the easiest horse to train. Last preparation prior to winning all these races, he was running in the bush, of course. And he was much easier to place. And the program that we set for him is just to race him and do nothing with him. That suits him. Now he's up in those sort of better class races. It's much harder because you haven't got those races available for you. So you've just got to race him when the option comes about. And, you know, it just took him forever to get fit. So it wasn't that the horse didn't come back well. He was really flying at home. But, you know, just when you're running in Mini Everest week in, week out, it's you know, and you're not fit, you're sort of against it from the start.
Must have been a massive thrill, though, Denny, when he was going through that golden period there where you just kept backing him up and he was winning and running well.
Oh, no doubt about that. I mean, I couldn't believe it. I've never seen anything like it. I mean, within 4 weeks, all that had eventuated. And so it wasn't weeks and weeks. It was, albeit the horse, you know, had raced for so long, it blew me away. I just couldn't believe it. And, you know, even now, I went for Warren at West. I'm sure you boys know where that is. And I had this young fellow, he must have been 11 or 12 year old, follow me back to the horse stores. And it didn't click on me. He said, how's Shelby? And I said, yeah, mate, he's good. He's good. And continued to walk. And he pulled me up about 20 metres further and said, do you mind if I take a selfie?
Oh,
you and I. And, you know, that's what that sort of horse has done. And, you know, it made me day. It's sort of a reflection on what that horse sort of did for people. He had all the $1 and $2 punters on him, and it was an amazing ride.
No, that's great stuff, and certainly well deserved for yourself, knowing what you've gone through as well, Denny. And just some others we can follow in the next week or two, heading to the races.
Oh, look, you know, I think maybe. We haven't got much racing at the moment, but looking a bit further beyond that, a horse called Bandy's Boy, one to watch, maybe in the new year.
And are you going to be active in the sales, I guess, early next year? Are there any, you know, shares available with any horses around at the moment?
Look, always. We'll be looking, and we're always selling shares. And, you know, we've been doing it pretty tough as far as getting new owners in. I don't know why, but... we're always open for new horses coming through, and we paid a bit of money for some horses last year, and through Shelby we sold those fairly quickly, and we'll be going back to the sales this year, so always looking for new owners to come in.
Okay, anyone interested, dennywilliamsracing.com.au, the place to go and get in contact?
Yeah, for sure. That's just give me a call. I'm always here, so.
Great stuff. Well, Denny, well done on what I'm sure was one of the great moments of your training career this year with Shelby 66 winning that Galaxy, and looking forward to seeing what your stable can produce over the coming months. Thanks for your time this morning, and good luck with Marsabit, obviously, on the quick backup this weekend as well.
Yeah, thanks, boys.
He's heading to the airport, ready to go to Melbourne for the Australian Open this week for the Sydney Morning Herald. Adam Pengilly, good morning.
Morning, Jared. Morning, boys. Yeah, got my travel sorted. Not about Clarkie's travel schedule, Jared. You're driving to Mungie. I know you don't sleep, Clarkie, but seriously, getting up at 2 o'clock in the morning and driving to Mungie.
Too much, you reckon?
Yeah, I think it's a bit too much, isn't it?
Yeah, I think I've just talked him out of it. Well, he's talked himself out of it.
I'm a morning person, though, Adam. I'm safer driving. If I can go afternoon Thursday, I think that's best for everyone.
I agree.
Yes.
I'll be worried about you.
I should not be driving a car after 8 p.m.
Mate, the wombats, the ruse.
Yeah, okay. Listen, I'm all ears. I'm all ears.
That was my issue, Jared. You got to worry about the ruse and everything on the road at that time of night. So Thursday afternoon, Clark, you have a quiet night up there on Friday night, and you'll be sweet. Or Thursday night, you'll be ready to go Friday morning. Mm.
So while we're talking your golf travels, back page of the Herald today, Green calls for mixed events at Olympics. Hannah Green saying, let's do a combined men's and women's event at the Games going forward. And, of course, we're going to have the Australian men's and women's Open played at the same time this weekend as well.
Yeah, I had a bit of a chat to Hannah Green, Jared, over the course of the weekend, and just was talking about the idea of having both the men's and women's national opens being played adjacent to each other this week in Melbourne. And she was of the belief we could maybe even go a step further and have men and women playing in the same team together in mixed gender events. So whether that happens or not, I don't know, but the Olympics to me seems like the perfect vehicle for them. Because I don't know if you guys have followed golf at the Olympics the last couple of years. It's been back for only the last two Olympics at Rio and then Tokyo, obviously, last year. Jeez, it was boring. I hate to say it. when you play just another individual stroke play event over 72 holes, I think these guys and girls are looking for something a little bit different at the Olympics and try and get that team camaraderie and spirit, and they just play the same old tired format in the Olympics. And they're still good events, but I reckon it's a potential to do so much more with that Olympics. So we'll wait and see what happens. I don't think anything will change for Paris, but Hannah's definitely a proponent of having, I suppose, a men's and women's combining in a team's event. And I think she said that Cam Smith and Mark Leishman, who represent Australia in the men's format in Tokyo, are both big advocates of the idea as well. So, yep, it'll be fascinating to see how it works this week and see if the golf officials want to make any moves on that front in the next few years.
I didn't see much sport over the weekend, but I read a few of the headlines, Adam, and I saw Cam Smith won that golf tournament. And he must have played well because you were thinking that he was going to be pretty tired from all the work that he did in the lead-up to that event.
Yeah, he was tired, Loz. He had so much stuff on all week from being presented the keys to the city. He had big coaching clinics. He had the big Greg Norman medal on Tuesday night. He was flat out all week. He actually played with Cameron Smith, the rugby league player, Loz. I don't know if you saw it in the pro-am last week, and gave him a few tips as well. And everyone was just following around everywhere. So it was a huge week for him. He found his game on the weekend and just grounded out on Sunday afternoon when he was threatened. So he was great. I'd imagine he's going to be extremely hard to beat again this week, provided he travels down to Melbourne okay and has sort of recovered from, I imagine there's a pretty big party on Sunday night, I reckon, with all his friends and family around up there in Brisbane. But the Australian Open, the tournament he wants to win, that's the one out of the two he came back for that he was most prioritising, given he'd won the Australian PGA a couple of times previously. I reckon the gallery's going to be huge again this week, boys, in Melbourne.
Racing news, and looks like we're going to see this very impressive Australian bloodstock winner from, Kembla last start, running around at Rose Hill Nugget this weekend.
Yeah, we're back to benchmark racing this week, Jerry, but he will be the headline horse if he does accept later in the week for Kieran Maher and David Eustace. Very keen to see what he does. He's obviously good in Melbourne first up from Europe, and then he was great winning at Kembla Grange. They've got the Ingham next week, or the old Villiers race coming up, so I'm not quite sure whether the stable and the Australian Bloodstock boys will try and hold him back for that race, or might try and back him up into the Ingham, but it looks a really nice race for him this week, getting to back to benchmark class again. So I reckon he could be one of the finds of the summer. If he continues his form through the next few weeks, it could be a serious horse. Everything that suggests he's running good times at the moment, so he's going to be a genuine group winner in the making. Whether it's in the next few weeks or not, I'm not too sure. But, horse that probably will headline the card at Rose Hill this week if he is among the final acceptances on Wednesday.
What about Rothfire, buddy? What's the latest with it?
Yeah, Clark, he's coming home. Robert Heathcote said that he's going to abandon that Perth campaign over there. He raced on speed in that Winterbottom Stakes on the weekend at Ascot. It was a race that was set up for the Swoopers. He said, no, I'm not going to go to the Gold Rush race, which is worth $1.5 million. A serious race over there in Perth. A good coin at the moment, but he's going to bring him home. So he won't contest the rest of the Perth Carnival and probably miss the Magic Millions Carnival, obviously, as well up there in Queensland. So I'd imagine Robert would take stock, try and find some targets in the autumn, but we won't be seeing Ross fly the next few weeks back at the racetrack.
The Magic Man. It's all over.
It is, Jared. It is. We haven't given this too much airtime, have we, the last couple of days? But he's been battling quite a serious hip injury for a while now, and he just can't get on top of it, Joe Moreira. And his doctors have advised him to retire and virtually hang up the saddle, which is quite a shame. He's been struggling with it for a while now. I don't think the Hong Kong environment as well suit him that great either. They've had some really harsh COVID lockdowns and restrictions over there in Hong Kong, so he spent a lot of time back in Brazil. Last week, he put his notice into the Hong Kong Jockey Club that he was going to withdraw his licence. So that's happened. He's going to hopefully ride at the international meeting in a week and a half time, and then have a bit of a farewell tour, if I'm putting in those terms, for 3 or 6 months. I'd love to see him come down to Australia for a couple of meetings on that farewell tour. I don't know when it would suit, maybe Magic Millions or maybe the first part of the Sydney Autumn Carnival, I'm not sure. But yet one of the best jockeys we've seen in the world, if I'm putting in those terms, for the last decade, is getting very close to retirement.
Thank you, Adam. Have a safe trip to Melbourne.
See you, boys. I'll chat to you tomorrow.